This is Jay Sekulow. It's the president versus the deep state.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
This is an ordinary course of business in Washington, D.C. What you're witnessing today at CFPB happens at every single agency, every single couple of years, which is a transition. It just so happens that CFPB has never been through a transition before.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
It was inevitable at some point. It was either going to be now or in July that Mr. Cordray left and Mr. Trump was going to get a chance. President Trump was going to get a chance to put someone in this position. So I had a chance to walk through with a lot of folks here who had not been through transition what they should expect.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Well, the drama at what's called CFPB continues, and this is a fight between what is clear, the deep state, and the president of the United States. And I say that because what seems rather unremarkable to me is you've got a vacancy now in the bureau, right? So there's a vacancy at the CFPB. So there's a vacancy. Why would the former director be able to appoint his replacement when it's something under the executive branch of government? But yet they're making this into like a constitutional showdown. So the heir apparent on the former director of the CFPB is now filed a federal lawsuit trying to seek the position that has been filled by the president's appointment of Mike Mulvaney. And this should be a non-issue and a no-brainer, but yet it is now literally a federal showdown in Washington. But folks, this is the deep state versus the president.
That's right. I mean, in a normal situation, in any government agency, if the head of that agency or department steps down for a short time period, sometimes for a long period, that deputy, whoever's the number two, assumes the acting director role. But the moment the president appoints the new person, that person is no longer in that role. And the question here, and I think this goes to Than Bennett, Than, Would Mick Mulvaney need to be reconfirmed for this position as he's OMB director? He would have to go through a reconfirmation process. But at right now, shouldn't this person who he tried to give the job to just be the acting director?
Yeah, he doesn't need confirmation, Jordan, to be the acting director. Look, whether it's Mick Mulvaney or somebody else, yes, you need Senate confirmation to be the permanent head. But to be the acting director, you don't need Senate confirmation at all. You need to assume the job, be appointed by the president. And then one other thing, Jordan, you need to show up for work to lead the agency. Guess what Mick Mulvaney did? He showed up to lead the agency. This other person who's now suing, she didn't show up yesterday.
Yeah, so here's the question, though. This should not be a constitutional showdown. This should not be a constitutional crisis. This is not that complicated. But literally, it is in, as we speak, it is in federal court. So that's what's made this such interesting moment for an agency in transition. Well, agencies go into transition all the time. This is not like when John Ashcroft was sick, when he was the attorney general, and they appointed the deputy to be the acting attorney general. That happens. That happens. This is the person left. The person leaving doesn't get to appoint their successor. Not the king. They're not the king of the agency. They're an employee of the president of the United States. So clearly, constitutionally, the president's in the right here. Jordan?
Yes. I mean, even when a statute says that there's a line of succession, the president always has the ability to appoint the executive branch directors, deputies, and on down there. The only people the president doesn't appoint are the bureaucrats. But when they are political appointees, as this position is, the president can appoint the director that goes through confirmation. He can decide whoever he'd like to become acting director. The person who resigned, and by the way, he resigned instead of being fired. So the president gave him that opportunity, and then this is his going away present, was trying to create a constitutional crisis. This is the deep state Obama world still at work. How many months now are we in? 10 months?
10 months.
10 months into the Trump administration, and the Obama team is still attempting to undermine this president and take him to federal court.
All right, we're taking your calls on all of this. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Your reaction to the deep state. We'll take your calls when we come back from the break. Logan?
That's right. 1-800-684-3110. You can find us broadcasting live on social media. Facebook.com/JaySekulow. ACLJ.org. Twitter and Periscope @JaySekulow. And follow us all. Get your questions or comments in via Facebook or Twitter. Be right back.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation. The rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, everybody, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. So you got an Obama-era official at the CFPB sues the Trump administration on Sunday night to block Budget Director Mike Mulvaney from taking control when he was appointed by the president to take control. Why does the former terminated director think they have the constitutional authority or statutory authority to appoint the acting director? This isn't someone that is being appointed because of acting because there is a someone sick. This is a vacancy. But I want you to understand, forget the CFPB for a second. Put that aside. This is a real constitutional showdown that's been created. The Constitution wins, and I believe the president clearly carries the day here. But this shows you the nature of this. All right, we got a lot of calls coming in on all of this. Let me play what Mick Mulvaney had to say, which kind of underscores what I said. Take a listen.
If you've really studied the constitutional nature of our government, you study the way that the bureaucracy is supposed to work, it would both frighten and disturb you that this agency is as independent as it is. And it doesn't surprise me, by the way, that this, you know, to the extent we're having a succession challenge as lodged by Ms. English, it doesn't surprise me that that grows out of an agency that thinks it's not accountable to anybody in the first place.
Why does Ms. English think she could do this? And why does the former director think he could do it? I mean, why do they think they could do this? That's the question I'm asking. Constitutionally, they have no authority. Statutorily, they are completely misconstruing the statutes here. And again, I think this just points to that a leftover hostile deep state actor that wants to get their position out. It's a free country. You go to court if you want to go to court. But at the end of the day, I think the president and the administration carries the day here. I think this is really on the nature of absurd.
Do you think even with a liberal judge at the district court level, do you think they could meet that hurdle even? Or
tough.
I mean, how would they? They'd have to do some legal judge, dancing,
listen,
huh?
Yeah, you could get a judge that does it. But I mean, you'd have to rewrite the law and rewrite the Constitution.
Yeah. Yeah, and then by the time, if you got to the circuit level. But the fact that you're even talking about having to get to that level over something so absurd, this is one goal of the deep state, is to prevent the operation of the Trump administration's government. So they don't like Mick Mulvaney in this position, the former congressman, now confirmed director of the Office of Management and Budget. He was confirmed in February, so he's already gone through that process. They don't like the policies he will bring to this bureau. So what are they doing? Well, they know that long-term they're going to lose this battle, I think, legally. I think they understand that.
Yeah.
But what they are doing is preventing Mick Mulvaney and the Trump administration from carrying out and running this bureau the way they intend to, the way they want to, the way the American people elected them to run it.
All right, let's do this. Let's take some phone calls. Our phone lines are open for you, by the way, at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take a call.
All right, let's go to Sandy in Illinois on line two.
Hi, Sandy. Go ahead.
Hi. I just have a quick question. Yep. I'm just wondering what it's costing the American people to defend our president from all these crazy lawsuits. And,
well, the Department of Justice has a civil division, the civil division defense. That's the way it works. So that's in there. But, I mean, it's a free country. People can file lawsuits. But I think that this is, if you look at this, I think the real problem here is that a leftover bureaucrat thinks they have the authority to do this and are literally making a federal case out of it. I mean, literally, it's in federal court. So yeah, they can bring a suit, then you gotta fight it out in court. And I'm going to look at the possibility of the American Center for Law and Justice filing an amicus brief here. Well, I'll have our team take a look at that because this is, I think it's an interesting and important legal issue. So we'll take a look at that. That's a friend of the court brief that we can file on cases like this. We do that all the time. And our cases, our amicus briefs have been cited by the Supreme Court before, so they can have an impact. All right, we're taking calls 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Logan, who's next?
Let's go to Wendy, who's calling in California. You're on the air.
Hi, Wendy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering, has any person in the history of our country in this situation ever attempted to do what this woman is doing?
I think there actually has been attempts to do these things. I don't know if it's been to this nature where there's been an actual termination. Someone was offered the chance to resign. But there has been, I think there's been some attempts. We'll get the details on that.
There was a federal court opinion. This is under the Obama administration. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals last year upheld Leif Solomon's appointment under the Vacancy Act as general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board, noting that neither the Vacancies Act nor the NLRB Act is the exclusive means of appointing an acting general counsel, and that the president is permitted to elect between these two statutory alternatives.
That's a very different situation.
So here, the president can always act separate from the statutes to appoint the acting
director. Because let me tell you what the key thing is here. A statute cannot override the Constitution. So Congress passes a law, and if that law is unconstitutional, it's of no effect. And that's what, so here what the challenge has to be, they're bringing a challenge statutorily. You go back, and the response to that challenge is both a constitutional response saying, no, that's not the way it works under the Constitution, and statutorily, that's not what the language supports. So that's the nature of what you have here. So, Than, how is this playing out in Washington? Give us kind of an update on where it actually looks right now.
Well, to be honest with you, Jay, I don't think people understand what constitutional leg those that think Richard Cordray has the ability to do this are standing on. I mean, look, there's a reason that Article 2, Section 1 vests all the power of the executive branch in the president of the United States. Jay, it's because he's the only one in the executive branch that is accountable to the people. He's the only one that's elected. So that's the very dangerous principle that's at play here, is that if we allow bureaucrats, no matter what the statute says, to override Article 2 of the Constitution, then you remove the executive branch from the accountability to the people. That's a very serious thing, and I think people here are paying attention. Now, some of it's getting overshadowed by the tax bill, but we have to fight for it, even though a lot of the attention is there.
Do I dare mention the tax bill? Tell me
well,
where
it's going to...
We'll save that for the second half, but go ahead.
We've got a lot to talk about there since yesterday. But
give us a 30-second view, and then we'll get back to it later in the broadcast.
All right, 30-second view, 2:30 today in the Senate Budget Committee. They are supposed to combine the language and send it to the House floor. Usually, Jay, that is procedural. As of this moment, there's an 11-10 advantage for the Republicans there. They don't know if they have the votes to get it through the Senate Budget Committee. So that's the 30-second view.
You know, here's the thing, the position back on the CFPB thing. Jonah Goldberg said this really well, but let me take it a step further. And that is the idea that an executive branch agency leadership can't be determined by the chief executive is completely contrary to the Constitution of the United States. Here's what Jonah Goldberg had to say.
If the president of the United States cannot appoint a head of an executive branch agency, that means that this agency isn't in the executive branch, which just basically means it is free-floating outside of the Constitution, which is outrageous.
There you have it. So here's the reality of what we're dealing with, and I think this is important to point out. This is where the constitutional showdown comes into play. This is who gets to make the appointments to these executive branch agencies. You elect a president, that president, this time it's President Trump, last time it's President Obama, they get to make executive agency appointments. Now, some of those are with the advice and consent of the Senate. We understand that. But on an interim level, when you have someone that's terminated, not just so there's a vacancy here, it has to, the president has to have that. Even the Ninth Circuit opinion acknowledges that. So this whole argument that the left's coming up with is both disputed as to the statutorily and constitutionally. And I think that's what we got to remember here.
Yeah, absolutely, is that there is no way, I mean, when you look at the actual law, that you can pull this off, that a director of a executive branch agency
who
quits,
right,
can appoint a successor, and the president can't, instead of the president of the United States, that somehow a former director supersedes the executive power of the president of the United States in an executive branch agency. That cannot stand. That will never stand. We would not have a commander in chief if this were able to stand. Now, ultimately here, you can have acting directors. Sometimes presidents let those deputies just become that, but they don't have to. They can appoint whoever they want as the acting director and whoever they want as the actual director who has to go through the confirmation process. This cannot stand the test of the rule of law, and it would have huge implications if it did. But this is, again, to me, how I interpret this is the left, the deep state, undermining the president's ability and the Trump administration's ability to do what it can, not through Congress, not through the judicial branch, but through its own executive branch, undermining the executive branch power, which is the most clear power the president has.
Who thinks that a head of an agency that quits would have the right to appoint their replacement? I mean, if you're the king, you could say my heir apparent is. But we're a constitutional republic. We don't have heir apparents. We have constitutional heir apparent, so to speak. If there was a transition in power, a president that becomes is no longer serving, dies in office, whatever it might be, you have a vice president. Then you have the Speaker of the House. I mean, that's in our Constitution, transition. This is a vacancy. A vacancy has been created. The previous occupant of that office doesn't get to make that decision. All right, we'll take more calls and comments when we come back from the break. Don't forget also, today is National Giving Day, and we're in our matching challenge campaign here at the ACLJ, just a few days to go. So, again, to help us make our goal, go to ACLJ.org. As we get ready, probably to file a brief in this very case, ACLJ.org, any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for.
That's right, and phone lines are open right now if you want to call in, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You can find us broadcasting again online on social media where you can get your comments in. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
So what happens when the leftover, the former, the previous acting director says, you know what I'm going to do for a federal government agency? I'm going to appoint my heir apparent. And I don't care what the president does, because the heir apparent that the bureaucrat appoints decides to file a lawsuit against the federal government, saying that the president doesn't have the authority. Joining us is our director of policy, Professor Harry Hutchison. We'll take your calls as well at 800-684-3110. First, Harry, your reaction to this, I call deep state versus the president, Constitution versus the deep state, may be better. What do you think?
Well, Jay, I think the drama continues. Essentially, many leftists suffer from what I call the Trump derangement syndrome. It's also important to step back and recognize that the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau was created originally as a rogue agency. So never before in U.S. history did we create a single member, quote unquote, independent agency.
Independent of what? That's what I keep asking the question. It can't be independent of the Constitution.
Absolutely not. But it's independently funded. And today we have a situation where the former, the outgoing director, claims he has the authority to name his own successor. In other words, he is suggesting that he was a king and he can now appoint his successor.
You know, the whole
this
thing
is clearly, in my opinion, unconstitutional and inconsistent with the rule of law.
You know, as Jordan said, this should not even be a close call. The fact that it's, I mean, anybody can bring a lawsuit, we know that. But this should not be a close call. I want Logan, get me some comments on Facebook. But Jordan, you got to look at that aspect of it too. Constitutionally, I don't want to go to Fan also, but this is not a close call.
No, it's been tried before. Even the Obama administration fought this. They won successfully in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, where the Ninth Circuit said it doesn't matter what you've got on statute. It doesn't matter what you have on a Vacancies Act. The president can always appoint the acting director if they choose to appoint someone who may not be in that line of succession. Now, oftentimes, they don't. Oftentimes, you see that the deputy becomes the acting director until the president makes the choice of who he wants to be the actual director that goes through the confirmation process. So it doesn't come up that often. But when it does, the courts have been clear. Now, these have been lower courts. It hasn't even reached the Supreme Court. The courts have said that the president absolutely has the right not to just appoint the director, but the acting director as well. And they do not have to come from some line of succession. They could come from some different government agency. They could come from the private sector.
Yep.
Into the government agency.
What are you seeing online, Logan, right now? What's the reaction to all this?
Yeah, Kimberly.
Do people understand that it's deeper?
I think probably. Kimberly just said, "I'm fed up. When are those obstructing the law going to be held accountable?"
Well, this is. I think this actually, Kimberly's point is the right one, and that Than, that's where I want to go with this in this last segment of the first half hour here, and that is, this is obstructionist. I mean, it's of an agency, but it's obstructionist.
It's obstructionist from an unelected bureaucrat. Let's be very clear about it. I mean,
right.
Look, the executive, an agency can't be a part of the executive branch. It cannot have executive authority, which the CFPB does, unless it's subject to the chief executive. So let's go back to what Jordan said just a minute ago. Can a statute permit an outgoing director to place an interim director if the chief executive does nothing? Well, sure, but that permission does not override the president's ability to step in and fill the vacancy if he wants. It's very clearly spelled out. If people pull up Article 2 of the Constitution,
yeah,
it's literally the very first sentence of Article 2 gives the president this power.
Harry, what is their argument? I mean, what is the heir apparent's argument, basically, statutorily?
Well, the argument raised in the lawsuit by Richard Cordray's successor is there is an absence, and hence he has the authority to appoint his successor. In reality, his resignation as director created a vacancy.
Right.
And clearly the president has both statutory and constitutional authority to appoint Cordray's successor. That will indeed be litigated. But it's also important to note that it's highly doubtful that this agency, the CFPB, is constitutional. And if it's not constitutional, then the president has the power to fire the director at will, meaning that the president of the United States could fire Leandra English, the so-called deputy director, at will.
It's the whole thing's absurd. All right, let's go ahead and take another call, Logan.
All right, let's go to Linda in Kentucky online, too.
Hey, Linda, you're going to ask the real question. Go ahead.
Yes, my real question, I guess, is there a simple way for the president to get rid of the deep state? I know there's in several layers in different places. What is the most simple way for him to get rid of the deep state?
If there was a simple way, everybody would do it. Look, these bureaucrats are entrenched, and this is what you've got right now is more than just a deep state bureaucrat. You've got an attempt to basically rewrite the Constitution of the United States. I mean, as everybody's been saying, this idea that you can have a departing executive, director of an agency, appoint their successor, and the president of the United States, the chief executive of the United States under Article 2, can't do anything about that? And that cannot be right. That cannot be legal. That cannot be constitutional. I think the Department of Justice will adequately defend it, but I'm going to talk to our team after radio to see if we need a weigh in on this, because we've got a lot of constitutional expertise on these things.
Yeah, and you have to wonder also what documents were going around that agency that may be available in a FOIA request, because I want to remind people the FBI has a deadline coming up November 30th, just in a couple days, to provide documents on our FOIA request involving the Clinton-Lynch tarmac meeting. That's coming up, Dad, on Thursday. I wonder if there's a potential FOIA opportunity here to see what Richard Cordray was up to when he chose to resign and pull this move, and if there's documents about what he was trying to do, which I believe was undermine the President of the United States.
Yeah, well,
and that wouldn't be classified.
So, again, here,
that's a very, very important point, because the general counsel of the CFPB agrees with the president and has issued a memo suggesting that the president has authority to appoint Mick Mulvaney.
And Mick Mulvaney referenced that in a question that he received. Take a listen to this, number 22.
Are you concerned that the district court could introduce some kind of injunction to stop you continuing?
Not concerned. I mean, the court can do whatever the court is going to do. That's fine. I've read the legal opinion of not only the Department of Justice, but as interestingly, the legal opinion of the general counsel here that says the president's right. So my guess is the court will hear the same arguments from capable folks. If the court decides to issue a temporary restraining order, order me not to come in the building, I will absolutely follow the law. I want to make that perfectly clear. We follow the law around here. That's what we do in the executive branch.
Except the executive branch has the authority to do it. It's like hard-pressed to see a court. You never know what a judge will do. All right, so we're going into the next half hour of the broadcast. We'll be talking about this. We'll be talking about taxes and a lot else to do. Yep.
Potentially a government shutdown as well.
All right, we'll be back with the second half hour of Jay Sekulow Live, and you can continue listening if you don't get on your local station or you want to change it up live on social media. You can watch us in television studio or here live on Facebook, Periscope, and ACLJ.org. Just search for Jay Sekulow. Make sure you're following all of us at Jay Sekulow, at Jordan Sekulow, at Than Bennett, Logan Sekulow, and at ACLJ. You can also make sure to download the ACLJ app, and even iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or even Roku. Just look for ACLJ. The Roku Channel Marketplace, and subscribe to the Jay Sekulow Live podcast. Couple lines are open still. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Right back with more.
Don't forget the matching challenge campaign also. ACLJ.org.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We've been talking about this Consumer Finance Protection Bureau and the unconstitutional move by its resigned director trying to appoint his successor, who is different than who the president has appointed as a successor. And they've actually filed a lawsuit in federal court saying, no, the person who quit their job has the power to appoint someone in an executive branch agency, not the president of the United States. Just think about that for a moment. Let that settle in as we go to this next very important topic. And Than, that is the potential of a government shutdown. We didn't talk about this much at all yesterday. December 8th is a deadline for a government shutdown. If there is a government shutdown, which increasingly, even the president has said, it looks like it's going to be tough to get around. Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi canceled their meeting with the president scheduled today on this very issue. So they want Republicans to face a shutdown because it always hurts the party in charge, regardless of who is responsible, even though it probably is the Democrats' fault here if it happened. Then what do you expect to see? Will we see a shutdown? And how will the shutdown affect Congress's work on tax reform?
Well, they absolutely want one, Jordan, although I think they may have miscalculated this time, because remember, this December 8th deadline was a result of President Trump negotiating with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi last time. He was willing to do so again. They were the ones that canceled that meeting today, Jordan. So I'm not so sure that it wouldn't backfire on them, even politically. And it's, of course, not the right thing to do on a policy wise. But as it would impact the tax debate, essentially, it would not impact the tax debate, Jordan. Even if this was not resolved before that shutdown took place, people who were deemed essential employees in the legislative branch would continue to report to work, as would every member of Congress in the United States Senate. They could still proceed. So even if this is not resolved by next Friday, the tax bill, that could continue to go forward even as the government shutdown debate was continuing to happen.
All right, that is important, folks. We're going to get into all of this. We're going to get into the Republicans. We went through it yesterday, and we've broken it down for you kind of that there's seven Republicans with their own issues in the U.S. Senate. Remember, it's already passed through the House. In the U.S. Senate, they kind of group together with what issue they have with whether or not they will vote for the Senate plan, which they're trying to have the vote as early as just in 2 days, as Thursday. So we're going to walk through that, but I do want to take a phone call now. Let's go to them.
All right, let's go to line one. Eugene in Las Vegas, Nevada, you're on the air.
Hey, Eugene.
Hello. I have two quick questions. President Trump, with his executive authority, couldn't he use his powers to just have law enforcement come forcibly remove her? And then why can't it be stopped, these frivolous lawsuits? It's so obvious they're doing this to block him. Can anything be done to stop these?
Well, one thing that's been done is that the president, Harry, has appointed an acting director. He showed up to work today to run this bureau.
Absolutely.
So, and as he said, unless a court orders him not to be there, the president has taken that action to say, no, this is the actual director. He is running the show. So the president's taken that action. The next step will be to see whether or not the court even hears this challenge or if they just throw it out.
Absolutely. So Mick Mulvaney has a lot of support in his current position. First, the president has appointed him as acting director. Secondarily, the general counsel for the CFPB agrees with the president's ability to appoint a successor. The Office of Legal Counsel of the Justice Department also agrees. More likely than not, a court will agree. And if a court agrees, and then if Leandra English tries to assume authority, then you can get a court order blocking her from ascending to the directorship. So I think at some point in time, it may indeed be necessary for U.S. Marshals to come in and physically remove her.
Yeah.
But it's also my view that the president could fire Leandra English at will.
Right. So, I mean, the president could keep firing people there as he would like to because he has that authority as president of the United States when it comes to these political appointees in the executive branch. Folks, we've got a matching challenge right now online at aclj.org. And Logan, whatever people donate online is doubled.
That's right. No extra cost to you. It's doubled. Right back.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Well, there's a lot of issues here when you've got the president saying, here's my interim appointment to fill this vacancy until confirmation, and you've got the former director of an agency saying, well, I'm sorry, Mr. President, I don't care what the Constitution says, you can't do it. And that's basically what you've got, a showdown over the CFPB, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Having said all of that, I think the Constitution's clear, and we may well be filing a brief. But let's go ahead and take some phone calls on this. Ryan's calling. He's on line two. Hi, Ryan. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hello. Yes. I was just wondering, where does the mechanism of the former director replacing himself stem from? How's that explained?
Because they're taking the differential of you have a vacancy. Sometimes you have a situation, I'll just make it very practical, Harry, when it's a health emergency.
Absolutely.
And then there is an acting director because the person that is the director hasn't left his position, or he or she hadn't left his position. Rather, they have, because of medical issues, they had a sidestep for a while. That's the difference, though, between a vacancy, when you have a vacancy that the person's gone, and a situation where you've got basically a temporary situation.
I think that's correct. So, in essence, the outgoing director is conflating a vacancy with an absence. Many of us, if we are sick for a week or whatever, we are out on an absence, and then we are scheduled to return. The outgoing director has simply read the language of the statute to conflate an absence with a vacancy. He has now assumed the authority, if you will, to name his own successor. That is clearly contrary to this Constitution, and it's also contrary to statutory language which is out there. There's a Vacancy Act, a federal statute
right.
that has been around for quite some time. The Justice Department has ruled on it. The Ninth Circuit has ruled on it. And so it's a nonsensical move by a rogue agency headed by a rogue Obama official.
But this is pure, I'm going to go to Jordan and Fan on this, pure politics, folks. Understand what we're dealing with here. It's politics.
Oh, absolutely. It is an attempt to prevent the Trump administration from running the government. Exactly what the deep state is all about. Whether it's leaks so that you are not able to focus on running the government. Whether it is lawsuits about filling vacancies so that you cannot run government agencies. This is all about the Obama administration still and their holdovers fighting to make sure that the Trump administration cannot fully be in control. Get this, 10 months in, is not fully in control of the federal government. Top agencies we're talking about. And we're not talking about three and four levels down. We're talking about the directors. Those are the people that the presidents appoint first. And that is who is being prevented here. Again, this is, I think, the deepest of the deep state at work.
Yeah. So, Than, here's the question. I mean, this self-appointed replacement for Cordray, the previous director, Leandra English, spent the day with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, the director that was appointed by the president showed up to lead the agency, while the one that tried to assume control wrongly went to Capitol Hill and met with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Look, here's the bottom line, though. Even though this is the resist movement, it's very clear how you resist it and appropriately push back. It's you appoint your own replacement, even in the interim, which is the president. What the president did. You cannot give the deep state free rein. Now, look, there's going to be a role for those of us on the outside to see how much of a coordinated plan that Richard Cordray had in place. I suspect, Jay, that this was long since planned. Remember, he knew he was going to leave, and he wanted his own successor to come in. The president did the right thing, say, while I look for a permanent replacement, here's my interim director.
All right, Dennis is on the phone, line three from Reno, Nevada. Dennis, go ahead. Dennis? All right, we'll go to Jamie calling on line five from Los Angeles, California. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. What I'm calling about is I'm curious on the tax reform. In California, U.S. Senator Kamala Harris and Dianne Feinstein are putting up this flowchart with the tax increases for the middle class. My question is how are they able to put up a flowchart when the president hasn't even revealed his tax plan yet?
Well, there's been discussions as to the tax plan, but listen, people will manipulate numbers to come up to the desired result. Hal, go to our director of policy.
Absolutely. So I think any objective analysis of either the House or the Senate plan suggests that most Americans, including most middle-class Americans, on average will receive a tax cut. There's some dispute between the House and the Senate, for instance, over whether or not state and local taxes will be deductible, whether property taxes will be deductible. So it's important to note that there is not a final plan yet. Having said that, I think it's clear that the objective of the Republicans in both the House and the Senate is to deliver tax reform that benefits the middle class. And I think the two senators from California are attempting to gin up opposition. And I think we should not fall for their approach.
All right, well, let's talk about where this tax act is going. We're taking your calls, by the way. How important? The president's on Capitol Hill right now to talk about the tax plan. Yep. I want to know as we get ready for the last segment here, how important is this tax reform to you at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110? Jordan, what are you hearing? And then we'll go to Than, too.
Well, yesterday we did a Twitter poll that ran for 24 hours on my Twitter account, twitter.com/JordanSeculo. We had 1,539 votes, so a lot of votes out there. 81% of people said that tax reform is the most important thing that needs to be done by the end of this year. That's 81% of the voters in the poll that we conducted of 1,539 votes. 19% said no. So there, but again, when you reach 80+% of, again, I would say most of my followers are conservative, that 80+% of them believe that this is kind of a make or break issue. Dad, you then look at, okay, you're not going to get Democrat support on this, especially on the Senate side. The House is really not a problem. I mean, the House has already got it through.
The Senate side, we're looking at seven senators, each for, by the way, some for different reasons. I can break them down very quickly for you. Sure. Even the New York Times, I'll have to give them credit, broke it down pretty easily. So there's Bob Corker from Tennessee, Jeff Flake from Arizona, James Lankford from Oklahoma, and Jerry Moran from Kansas. They're worried about increased deficits caused by these tax cuts. So that's their issue. And there's ways to get around that, pretty easy fixes. I don't think most of them are a real problem, except for potentially Flake and Corker, because they are leaving and they've had these battles with the president, though both have said that will not impact their vote. Then you look at Susan Collins. She has really one issue of concern. That is because the Senate plan, not the House plan, but the Senate plan gets at health care. It repeals the individual mandate in Obamacare. Remember, the president zeroed out the penalty through executive order, and HHS did that, but it's still on the books. The Senate tax plan repeals the individual mandate from Obamacare. Susan Collins has concerns about that. And there's two more senators, Ron Johnson from Wisconsin and Steve Daines in Montana. They're interesting. They want more tax cuts for small businesses. Their idea is they want small businesses and pass-through taxation businesses to get the same rate, or at least close to the same rate, as big corporations, which I believe right now, Than, that's would stand at both these plans at what, 25%?
It's 25% in the House bill. The Senate bill calculates it a little bit differently. Honestly, those two senators, Jordan, want it to look like the House version. I think that might ultimately be the play. I'll just very quickly, I thought that was an excellent overview. The one thing I'll add here is the thing that makes Ron Johnson and Bob Corker maybe more significant today is because they sit on that Senate Budget Committee that has to take a vote on this at 2:30. So they're trying to iron out those differences before they have to cast their vote later this afternoon.
All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. We're talking about the showdown between the president and the bureaucrats. We're talking about tax reform. Harry, you've looked at the tax reform proposals. First of all, just quickly as we go into break, how important is this for the American people?
It's very, very important. As someone suggested, we will never balance the budget with 1% to 2% economic growth rates. And that's been a huge problem in the United States for almost the last decade. There's been an absence of economic growth. Secondarily, it's important to note that we should have deep skepticism about Congressional Budget Office estimates about the budget deficit. Those estimates are grounded in static analysis as opposed to dynamic analysis. And we have clear history on our side, which suggests that they often underestimate the amount of revenue that comes into the federal government via economic growth. So the budget deficit concern, at least in my opinion, is overblown.
Today is National Giving Day, and we're going to encourage you, as we are in our last week of our November Matching Challenge here, we could really use your support. ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. We've got millions of you listening on radio, thousands on Facebook and TV platforms and social media platforms. Go over to ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we're going to get a matching gift for. So again, let me encourage you to do that at ACLJ.org. You donate $10, we get 20, 20, 40. You see how it works. So let me encourage you to do that. ACLJ.org. We come back from the break. Last segment, your calls on all of these topics. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation. and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation, the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the broadcast. Well, we've talked about tax reform. We've talked about obstruction with the president's appointment and a former director of an agency saying, well, that's not who I want. And that's now a showdown in federal court, and we'll probably be filing a brief in that. I'm going to meet on that after the radio broadcast. We also got a lot of calls coming in. We talked about a number of things, and including a possible government shutdown December 8th. There's a lot moving here, and we're taking your calls at 800-684-3110.
All right, let's go to Dennis, who's calling in Reno, Nevada, on line 3. You're on the air.
Hi, Dennis.
Yeah, I'd like to see the CFPB agency just eliminated. It's just another fake bureaucracy. We don't need it. And then along with that, I'd like to see, for tax cuts, I'd like to see spending cuts. We got to coordinate that together. But nobody wants to do that because it's all political.
The whole thing's become unbelievably politicized. I mean, you're absolutely correct there. As far as the CFPB being abolished, I'm trying to figure out exactly what it does.
Well, I mean, it was a one-man show. Remember, there was not a deputy in this position. Corduroy appointed a deputy. He made up the position of having a deputy director on his way out. So this person was not the deputy director that would usually assume an acting director's role unless the president decided they wanted to appoint someone else as acting director. He made this position up. This has been an agency just mired in. Remember, this was the whole recess appointment issue. Eventually did get confirmed, not to say it didn't do anything, but to say exactly what it does, well, that should be now up to the Trump administration.
Was there a team talk about this agency, if you will, fan. I mean, was this a staffing? I mean, what was this?
Sure, there were staffing, and they were taking executive authority to issue guidances over mortgage write-downs and various disclosure requirements. So essentially, Jay, they were acting as a branch of the executive branch, which of course makes them subject to the president. But to the caller's point here, the president agrees with the caller because he put in place a man, Mick Mulvaney, who also thinks this agency is redundant and that the directives that they've been issuing should be handled by other agencies. So I think he's put in a reformer who ultimately would like to see Congress do away with the agency altogether. But in the meantime, Jay, you have to have your person running an agency that's going to issue directives like this.
Well, that's not what the leftovers from the Obama administration are saying, that's for sure. They're taking a different view. They think they can self-appoint, Harry, their own replacement when there's a vacancy. That's a different than, hey, I'm going to be out. Someone's got surgery. They're going to be out for a week. The deputy's going to be in charge. There's a vacancy. The person's gone. And that person says, I'm appointing so-and-so. Well, let me ask you this. Are they saying the president can't fire that person? I guess they are.
I think that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
It's also important to note that historically, the director, Richard Cordray, he set the salary for his subordinates unilaterally. And so
agency needs to go.
So the salary structure at the CFPB is quite different than the salary structure at any other place within the federal government. So it's a rogue agency. It's arguably an unconstitutional agency, and it should be shut down. There is litigation that hopefully will get to the United States Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ought to shut this agency down expeditiously.
All right, let's go ahead and take another call, Logan, or a comment, whatever you like to do.
All right, let's go ahead and take this call. Let's go to Jesse in Pasadena, California. If you want to be on the air, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. You're up.
Hi, Jesse.
Hello. Hey. Hi, Jay.
Hey.
I just have a question.
Yep.
I have no faith in the Senate. I think they're going to try to stick it to Trump again. I was wondering, if it doesn't pass in the Senate, the tax bill, is there anything he could do on his own for taxes?
No. The president can't unilaterally change the tax code. So the Congress has to do it. So you raised the question I think that everybody's asking. I mean, right now, Jordan gave that list earlier, but right now it's a tough row.
Yeah, and he's what he's already done is zeroed out the individual mandate and the employer mandate, but he can't take that off the books. He can just zero out the penalties that come from it. Now, Than, as I go through this list, one question I had for you is, do Republicans have to get to 60 votes to get this legislation on the floor, or is this through the reconciliation kind of budget process?
Through the reconciliation process, which is why the budget committee has to vote on it today, Jordan. So, yes, they only need 50 votes when they get to the floor, but they do have to get a majority of the budget committee, and they only have a one-seat advantage. And both Ron Johnson and Bob Corker sit on that committee, which makes that a sticking point. But to the caller's point, we don't want the president to act as a king here. What we want is the United States Senate to do the job that it promised to its voters. How many times have we said it on this broadcast? It's our way of government, though. Under Article 1 of the Constitution, they have the authority to do this. Now it's time for them to deliver.
Here's the real – go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'm reading now, this is breaking in the Hill, that both Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia, and Senator Heidi Heitkamp out of North Dakota will not – comment on, they have not come out against, they're the only two Democrats who haven't really come out against the tax bill. And Than, the way it reads is they may not help it get past getting to a vote, but that if it looks like it is going to pass, so if it gets to 51, yep, they may jump on board. So is it still like a two-vote process to get it to the floor of the Senate?
At this point, more like three, Jordan. Neither one of them sits on the budget committee, so they won't have a vote today. So Republicans will have to move that together. But as early as Wednesday, there would be what is called a motion to proceed. Either one of those senators, Jordan, could help Republicans get the bill to a final vote, and then ultimately you have to have final passage. So budget committee today, a motion to proceed, and then final passage.
How many people are on the budget committee?
It's a 12-11 advantage for Republicans, so 23 altogether.
You have to get all 12 Republicans then to get this to even move in the Senate. If that does not happen today, this is over, Than?
Well, they have to move it to the floor. If it's going to move under reconciliation, the budget committee has to approve it. They would not have to approve it today, Jordan, but in order to get it to the floor under that privileged 50-vote threshold, the budget committee does have to compile what the Senate Finance Committee sent them and the Natural Resources Committee sent them. They want to do that today. If they can't get the 12 votes, they could push that back.
Okay. That's good for everybody to know. And you expect that vote to happen later this afternoon, Than?
It's scheduled at this point to meet at 2:30. A vote would happen sometime after they consider deliberations. One other thing I'll throw out there, Jordan, and I do not expect this, but you were talking about Democrats who may be talking to the president on this. If one of those 11 members of that committee were just conveniently not in the room at the moment,
that can work too.
Then it could only take 11 Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that happens, but I mean, this is
an abstention.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is your chance for error here is very small. I mean,
again,
you've got
just like
the margin
healthcare.
is so thin that it makes it very, very difficult.
And I do believe, I said this on the show, and I kind of want to double down on this statement. A lot of people keep saying, well, this election in Alabama, this is what will impact Republicans moving forward to the bigger midterm elections. To me, tax reform getting done is much more important than if Roy Moore or Doug Jones become a U.S. senator. If you get tax reform done, Republicans go into the midterm elections very strong. This only happens once every few decades, like 30 plus years. So if you get that done, the Alabama election becomes really a secondary, third, or not even issue. If you don't get this done, then all these sub-issues and scandals, they become the top issue as you lead into the midterm elections, because Congress has not done anything. And I'm not saying the president hasn't done anything. Congress has gotten nothing accomplished. And so then those secondary issues become the top issues, yep, and that starts hurting. But if you can get tax reform done, I think Republicans go into the midterm elections stronger than anyone would have predicted maybe a month or two ago when Obamacare, the repeal and replace, failed.
All right, that's going to do it for the broadcast today. Don't forget our matching challenge campaign. Just a few days left this month for us to make our goal, ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate to us, we're getting a matching gift for. That's ACLJ.org. Again, you donate $20, we get $40. It's National Giving Day, so we really would appreciate your help at ACLJ.org.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.